This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 223 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. Joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. Have you got over that man flu yet, mate? Oh, the poor little puppet.
Well, I'm manning up tonight, Bruce. Got out of my sick couch and staggered into the recording studio here to chat away to you. Because, you know, I love our listeners so much. It just means so much to me every Tuesday night to be here with you and them.
Fantastic. And me.
You know, I am slowly on the mend. As jokingly as we take the old man flu, I have been incredibly sick, and maybe I can actually be the first medically proved case of man flu. I don't know.
Certainly sounds like it's hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, as I said, I lost 9 kilos in weight.
Wow.
Which is well over 20 pounds to those people in the northern climes.
Yeah.
In just over 11 days. So it's, almost a kilo a day falling off.
Wow.
Mind you, I since in the last 13, 14 days, I've only eaten about 3 times. That'll probably explain it.
And you weighed yourself with your camera bag at the start, didn't you?
Well, my wife knew I was seriously sick because sitting next to the couch, on my side table next to the couch, has been half a block of chocolate for over a week.
What?
Yeah, exactly. So she knew I was sick because this is seriously something wrong, you know? That thing almost petrified and turned into like dust. It was there that long.
Wow.
Our house is an unheard of thing.
Same in this house.
So that was the first sign to my wife that maybe man flu exists.
Yeah, right.
Wow. So, but I am far better than I was.
Well, that's
and,
good to hear.
Excited to be up and about again, and looking forward to. I'm up in Sydney. Is this weekend? I'm coming up, isn't it?
No.
Isn't it?
No.
It's next weekend I'm coming up.
Well, of course, once people actually hear this podcast, it will be the following weekend. Yes.
Exactly. You know, my fault, I followed something on Facebook saying that they were coming up, it was on this weekend, but forgetting that the festival goes for more than just the time I'm there.
No, it doesn't, mate.
I'm the whole festival, but
that's
no.
That's right.
No. Yeah, there's some other sort of light show or something on Opera House, some other crap.
Okay.
dear, it won't just be my shining star over the skies of Sydney. What a crop.
Anyway. Now, listen, at the end of last week's episode, you hinted at a story that you didn't want to get into, because obviously it was going to take a while to discuss, about a high-profile Melbourne photographer who's quit the industry for some reason or other. What's the deal with that?
Well, high-profile-ish in certain circles, in certain styles of photography, in certain genres. I'm not going to go into any names. And the story's kind of developed a bit, not so much her story, but other things I've been looking at over the week has developed. What happened was this particular Facebook group that I'm a member of, and someone was pointing out, oh my goodness, this person's gone out of business. If she's gone, what hope do the rest of us have?
Okay.
And so there's a link.
Can you divulge what her main genre was? Was it weddings?
No.
Right.
It was baby,
family,
maternity.
Right.
Yeah. Very popular genre these days. And I know quite a lot of people who do it very, very well. And I've got to say, I've looked at the woman's work and she also did a pretty darn good job of it. So certainly nothing lacking as far as the skill side of the shooting side goes.
Okay.
But there's all these people lamenting, oh my goodness, this person's gone out of business. So I went and looked at I clicked the link, which I wouldn't normally do, but I clicked the link because there's a fair explanation apparently from this woman about why she was going out of business.
Right.
And basically she was saying that the reason she was giving up was that she was sick and tired of competing with the low-priced photographer, the person who undercuts the market so much that she's just not getting any work or enough work to justify staying in business, and she'd be better off going working in a store that actually pays an hourly wage.
Okay.
you know, and look, I understand there's an incredible amount of people out there with varied pricing and all this sort of stuff. So I can, to some degree, I can understand a point of view. But if you're established and you've been doing it for a long time and it's your passion, I don't understand how you'd give up if that was the only reason. So I sort of kept reading through the post and reading through trying to read between the lines somewhat.
Yep.
And I was seeing stuff like, oh, we've moved house, my computer's about to give up, my camera's broken, I can't afford to replace it, on. I'm starting reading all these other things that are part of the reason beyond just the person trying to compete against the cheap photographers.
Right.
And so I thought, well, it boiled down to it. So let's not analyse necessarily this one person who's, you know, it's terrible that she's had to get in that position, but, you know, what was her business plan like to start with? You know, if you're in a business where you have gear that needs regularly replacing, like computers and, I guess, cameras, mm-hmm. yeah, you have to build into your business plan your cost, your everyday part of doing business, the cost to replace those things.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, and something goes wrong and you don't have the money, well, you are out of business by default.
Yep.
Yeah, and yeah, so I was trying to look at who's to blame. Who's the reality to blame? I mean, my first port of call, if I was that woman and I thought my work was that good and I was being undercut that much, I'd just simply double my prices.
Right.
You know, I put such a gap between myself and these low end people that she's complaining about,
mm-hmm.
that there's got to be this pause for thought at the very least when you quote to a person.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, you can't win every customer. This is in every aspect of life. You can't win every customer. But if you price yourself a certain way, there's a certain range of demographic that aren't going to come to you in the first place. They'll know straight away. They're beyond. You know, I know there's photographers out there I would never ever be able to afford.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, because they charge $30,000 for a wedding, and you know, next time I get married, I'm not going to be paying that much. just don't tell the missus that. But you know what I mean. I don't go into a Mercedes Benz or Ferrari dealerships looking at cars.
No.
With the intent of knowing that, well, maybe if I offered them a tenth of what they're selling it for, maybe they'll sell me one.
No.
You know, so, and it's the same kind of thing as a photographer. If you price yourself and market yourself a certain way,
mm-hmm.
maybe you're not going to be having people as many rejections. So that was one of the aspects to her business. That rather than just giving up,
yep.
I couldn't understand. You know, why don't you try some alternate ways of saving the business you're purportedly passionate about doing? So that was a big thing there, and this goes for any photographer starting out. You've got to have this business plan in place that you've got to understand what it costs to do business.
Yep.
You've got to understand what your family needs to survive over the course of the year, and if you're not getting that, then you can't afford to do it full time.
No.
So you got to either make some sacrifices or understand just how much of the business you can actually do. You know.
Yep.
But to simply go out and blame, the person, because there's always going to be someone cheaper.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. To the point, I found, I think, the cheapest one ever tonight, which is fantastic. No, well, not quite, but darn close to it.
Right.
This is you can get a 3-year photography pass from this particular business.
Sorry?
A three-year photography pass.
Right.
For $150.
Right.
And that entitles you to up to 12 shoots per year.
What? 36 photo shoots for $150.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Right.
Plus you get all the photos edited.
So that's about $3 $3 a shoot.
Yeah. So you get all, yeah, but then she's got to at least put an hour's editing in. Yeah, shoot. So she's down to just under $2 an hour.
My God.
There is always going to be someone out there cheaper than you. So what do you do? Do you bleat and moan and give up your business? Or do you maybe approach that person if they are that close to you and stealing your business and offer to mentor them?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you put them under your wing and say, "Come with me, and let's deal with whatever issues you're dealing with your confidence factor that makes you feel you've got to sell things for this sort of price."
Yeah,
there's a confidence issue here somewhere. Let's work together as local photographers, And let's see if we can get your skill, you know, whatever issues you're dealing with, we can get you up to a certain level, and you might feel more comfortable charging a higher price.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking price collusion, but we are talking about raising the level of quality of all the shooters in the local area.
Yeah.
You know, don't exclude the person you know is undercutting. Include them.
Yep.
Yeah. And I see this all the time in country, small country towns. I do a fair bit of workshops. I'll have groups bring me in, and they're all in a small country town. They're all competing photographers, but they all share the expense of me coming up for the day, so that all can get to be better photographers, or all start to have a different vision and a different understanding. And that's fantastic to see.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant for everybody in town, both the photographer's family, and the people who are booking the photographers, because they all get a better quality of work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So with this woman, what brought this to a head for me was, you know, there's got to be lots of people in this woman's boat who are thinking about, oh, I'm just going to give up, you know? Don't think this is anything different. I said, I've been in this industry for 32 years, and there was $100 wedding photographers 32 years ago, yeah, and there's $100 wedding photographers now, you know? There might be more $100 photographers now, but it's more of your type too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a $2,000 wedding, there's a hell of a lot more $2,000 wedding photographers. There's a lot more $5,000. You know, there's a lot more business out there for all of them.
I guess it just comes back to knowing what price you're comfortable to do the work for, and then knowing the market segment that is going to be prepared to pay that kind of money,
yeah,
for the service that you are able to offer, and then marketing to that segment of the market.
Exactly. You
know, go find those customers, and don't worry about the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
You know, because there's always going to be cheap, as you said, there'll always be cheapskates who, you know, cannot or will not pay more than, you know, rock bottom price. And, you know, I know from experience that they tend to be the most painful clients to have anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't necessarily want them as clients.
No.
And you don't want to. You know, here's the thing. Let's say you're doing X amount of business, you know, and you double your price, but you lose half your customers.
Yeah.
You know what? You're doing half the work and earning the same amount of money.
That's it. Yep.
You know, I did this with a woman in Pennsylvania, gorgeous, gorgeous lady, and she was in the same thing. It was a confidence issue for her. She didn't feel confident enough to charge a reasonable price for her services, and she was becoming a reasonably competent photographer. Yeah, I trained her a fair bit, so her skill level was getting to a good, consistently good level, which is what you want. You want to have consistency to your results, not sort of haphazardness to your results.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to her, double your price. And she had a fit, you know, but she went home and tried it and emailed me straight away, you know, pretty much the next day, and saying, I had my first meeting with a client. I told them the new double prices. They didn't bat an eyelid to book me straight away.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I told her to double the prices again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she was very cheap. Doubling her prices, she was still cheap. And that it was actually 6 or 8 months later that I said to her again, you know, now's the time to double your prices again, which she did. And she's still getting good business. But she's actually now at a level where the family's sustainable financially from what she's earning and all. And there's not the resentment from the husband because, you know, the wife's away working on the computer for every night of the week for the $300 a week she brings in, which isn't, you know, enough for the 7 days a week she's involved in the business sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just if you are in that position as a photographer, yeah, think up alternatives, find other ways.
Stoked to hear you say that, because quite a few years ago now, when Richard Annable was just getting into the wedding photography thing, I remember him and I talking privately, and I'm sure he won't mind me recounting this story because we did talk about it at the time, that he didn't know how to set his pricing. And I said, look, mate, you know, start at whatever you think's a reasonable price. Yeah, maybe it's $1,000, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And every time you get another inquiry, because at the time he was getting a lot of word of mouth inquiries, you know, people who had heard about him from someone else who'd shot their wedding. I said, every time you get one of those word of mouth referrals, just up the price by 10%, you know, and just keep on doing it until you start feeling some pushback. You know, and yeah, I mean, you're saying double it every time. That's probably a little more than I would have suggested.
Depends where you start. It depends where you're coming from.
Yeah,
but you think about it, if you're doing a wedding for $1,000, you're talking.
But
if you were,
but some
doubling it is still only $2,000.
Mm.
which is still well under what the average wedding sells for.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden you are, so yeah, if you've increased your skill levels and your consistency and your confidence in shooting.
Yep.
Well, it's not unreasonable to double your price to $2,000 because now you're getting closer to industry. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then yeah, you put another year or so's hard work in, you develop more skills, more overall ability. You know, you're now getting to a level of where you are a very good photographer. Well, doubling it again is not outrageous because $4,000 is not an expensive wedding photographer. Yeah,
no.
It sounds harsh to say double your value, but... yeah, that's not. It's still, if you're $100 for a session down at the park as a family photographer, well, $200 isn't that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you become a very good one, well, $400 is very acceptable.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. As your confidence and skill level grows, well, how does your confidence and skill level grow? Well, either you do more jobs, but that can also tie you into a point where you don't feel you can increase your prices because this is what everyone's known you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you go find a mentor, find the person around the corner who's charging quite a lot more, and see if they'll take you under the wing. And and if they see the benefit that all of a sudden you'll start to increase your prices, well, it helps them too, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's my thought anyway. So this has all come to pass. And I've been looking at the same Facebook group just tonight, and I've got to tell you that, yeah, and they keep finding these photographers that are out there doing this, you know, kind of crazy stuff, I've got to admit. But, you know, to these people in this group, get a life yourself. Yeah, to be honest with you, you know, stop trying to find other people to put down so you feel better about yourself. Yeah, embrace, and this goes to the whole friggin' photo industry, to be honest with you. Stop putting down the mumtographer, the mumpreneur, the mum with a camera. They are the greatest growth area in the world of photography.
Yeah.
They are where the next fantastic, incredible artists are going to come from. Why? Because you get 1,000 photographers all out there shooting, getting better. Well, some of them are going to rise to the top and be incredible.
Yep.
And that's the greatest proportion of our market is that. And that's where our industry should be right behind. Yeah, don't bleat the fact that they're not charging as much as you think they should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Support and help them grow and help them increase their prices, you know? And everyone's going to be, but don't be jealous when all of a sudden they're a lot better photographer than you are. And, yeah, maybe, you know, you're going to be losing business because all of a sudden they're better than you, you know? My daughter at school, one of her best friends at school, her mum is a wonderful photographer, yeah, well awarded and all sorts of stuff, and yeah, she started exactly in that zone. She had a baby daughter 6 years ago and started taking photos of her. And yep. Now she's just got a cover of a magazine in the US. She's
wow.
Yeah, photographer of the year in 2010. She'll be all sorts of stuff around the place. But hey, but she's only a mum with a camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Industry. Anyway.
That's good. I think we picked up a new listener in Sydney, a guy called Harry Melos.
We did.
Harry.
G'day,
Harry. Joined the Facebook page for Shutters Inc. podcast, and he said, "Hi, guys. Just a quick note to say, keep up the great work on the podcast. Enjoying it very much. If you have a minute, check out some of my work."
So he hasn't got much taste, is what you're saying.
Exactly. So he's given us a link to his Melos Photography page on Facebook.
Now, I was going to look at that this week, and being so unwell, I didn't get around to it. Did you have a gander?
Well, I didn't actually look at his Facebook profile. Well, I went to his Facebook profile, and straight away I saw the link to his website. And so yes. I just completely skipped the Facebook profile and went straight to Harry's website. Harry, I love the design of your website. His images come up like full screen on my 24-inch monitor, and they just look stunning. He's big on his HDR. And
he is. I'm just looking at his Facebook page.
As anyone will know who's been listening to this podcast for a while, I'm not a huge fan of HDR. But, Harry, there's some really nice stuff there, man. And, thanks for your kind comments. And he also said, "Also, Bruce, love your pano work. Very inspiring. Would like to pick your brain sometime." Well, mate, anytime.
What a suck. Yeah, what a suck. He has actually just posted a question on our Facebook page about HDR, funnily enough, and I'm just trying to...
What are your thoughts on HDR post-production as far as product photography goes?
Well, okay, yeah.
Was that the question you saw?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Look, I to be honest, Harry, I'm not a huge fan. Like I said, too much of the HDR I see, it just looks like pixel vomit. Sorry. I know some people love it, and I haven't seen much that I really, really like. I thought some of Harry's work was quite tastefully done. But I have seen, you asking about product photography. I can't say I've actually seen any HDR on product photography, with the exception of real estate. Real estate in Australia seems to have embraced the old HDR thing in a massive way. Are you noticing that in Melbourne, Glenn?
Well, here's the thing, though, as well. There could be a stack of HDR on product photography, but it's done so well, you can't tell.
Well, that's possible, too. That is possible.
I think the most actual, if we're talking products, are usually lit so well they don't realistically need HDR anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely, real estate has become the big boon for them to have a bigger dynamic range in their shots. That's very popular for sure.
Yeah, you like your HDR, don't you?
I have my moments with it, you know. Yeah. It's a love-hate relationship. I love it, and some people seem to hate it. it's like anything, you know. Some days you feel like savoury, some days you feel like sweet.
Some days you're the windscreen, some days you're the bug. Yeah.
Exactly right. So you just think of the mood you're in and what you're shooting, I'm a father of a two-year-old and a six-year-old, so yep. I don't get to do sunrises, I don't get to do sunsets, you know. If I'm lucky, if I wanted to go shoot a landscape, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a miserable day, you know. That does not, you know,
a great landscape make.
No, but with a bit of HDR, it can certainly give a bit of kick, you know, that's not there otherwise.
For sure.
Especially in a bit of a flat Melbourne day, that can help. But I do like it for some architectural stuff. When it's done well, it can be fantastic. But as you say, there is an awful lot of over the top.
Yep.
And I think it's hard for people, if you're doing the post-processing that is way over the top, to realise. Yeah, it's right. Maybe something starting out and you're really pushing the boundaries, but not really realising that, as you say, pixel vomit.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, that people who do decide to delve into HDR do tend to go a little overboard with it at the outset, and unfortunately it's when you're just getting into it that you're all excited about it, that you're promoting it more heavily.
Posting it everywhere, and you're taking a lot of photos.
Yeah, you know, and so I guess that's why, you know, I've seen so much stuff that I've just gone, oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Because I guess once the thrill's worn off and you start to back off in your approach and be a little more restrained with it, you've got over the initial thrill and you're probably not promoting it as heavily and going, hey, here's my latest HDR creation. But, you know. Anyway.
Exactly. But if you get an incredible piece of architecture and then print it up large on either acrylic or metal,
right,
it can look pretty stunning.
I have no doubt.
I mean, the problem is what do people want? Do they want reality? Yeah, or do they want art or surreality? Or what some people like, some stuff. That's why you walk around an art gallery and it'll polarize people exactly the same way. Yeah, some people will love a classic painting, some people will love an abstract.
Sure.
The studio space that I lease has a building with like about 100 different artists in it with 100 different styles.
Right.
And you walk along and you go, oh, that's kind of odd. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's, oh, what on earth is that? You know? that's art. That's photography's art. That's, and there's some bad painters out there. There's some good painters out there. You know? There's some crude painters. It's not as far as topic, but as far as, that is crudely applied, and that could be the same with HDR. Sometimes it's a bit crudely applied, and sometimes it's done with more refinement.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just trying to go. What I would say, if anyone's wanting to get into this, is to go to Google, go to image search, and just type HDR and go through and find images that really go, that you go, wow to. Not wow because they're so over the top, but wow that maybe you didn't even realize it was HDR.
Yeah.
And find those examples and go, oh yeah, hang on a sec. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff I'd like to aspire towards.
Yeah. And I will confess, you know, despite my vocal, you know, rejection of HDR in principle, I have seen some that has absolutely blown me away. And I've gone, yes, I can see that's HDR, but it's been done really tastefully. And
yeah.
And as you said, it almost gets to a point where you question whether or not there's HDR being done. But, you know, when you've seen enough digital images to know the contrast range of a sensor, you go, nah, there's no way any camera
possible.
Would have done that. You know, no camera that is on the market today has got that kind of dynamic range, so there must be some HDR, but it's been done in such a refined and subtle and tasteful way that you just go, yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely. I had for many years a Flickr contact who was very, it was pretty darn good at HDR.
Right.
And I was going to try and find what his name was, and we'll keep on going on, but as soon as I come across his name, I'll bring it to your attention.
Well, I'll give you some time to go off and investigate while I talk about. There was a blog post on DIYphotography.net just the other day, in light of Magic Lantern coming out with the firmware upgrade for the Canon. DSLRs, which enabled you to pull raw video off the 5D Mark III. DIYphotography.net put together a list of, they called it the ultimate custom firmware for any camera roundup, which I thought was quite hilarious because there were only four. It's the ultimate custom firmware roundup. Two of those were for Canon, one was for Nikon, and one was for Lumix of all brands.
Don't pick on the Panasonics.
I'm not picking on it. It just surprised me that out of all the camera brands, someone's bothered to do custom firmware for a Lumix camera. But anyway, I'll put the link to that in the show notes. So if you are a Nikon user and you are a bit like me, you know, you're a bit of a tweaker and you like, you know, getting in and tweaking things and customizing things you want to investigate the idea of running custom firmware on your Nikon camera, then by all means, check it out. So, last week, or maybe the week before, we were talking about remote triggering systems.
We
mentioned the Nero trigger. Adam Davidson popped up on Facebook during the week and mentioned a product called Trigger Trap. And I went and had a look at this thing and absolutely fell in love with the look of it. I ordered one today. What it is a combination between a free app for your smartphone, either iOS or Android. So I was happy. And what they class as a dongle, which is a piece of hardware that is required to be attached to, you know, your device, whatever the device is that you're wanting to control, in this case a digital SLR camera, and the dongle basically, I'm not sure how it talks to your smartphone. I'm guessing it's probably Bluetooth or something like that, but what happens is you plug this dongle into your camera and the app on your smartphone then takes over the shutter release control for your camera. And this thing will work as a basic intervalometer, so you can set up, you know, take so many shots over, you know, this much time, or, you know, at such and such a number of seconds or minutes per interval. It then does a distance intervalometer, which is really exciting, where it uses the GPS in your phone. And you set up something like, say, take one photo every time you realize we've moved X number of meters or X number of kilometers. So you could sit your DSLR up in the front of your car and set this thing up to take a photograph every 100 meters. And then you could, you know, drag all those images into a video timeline at, you know, one image per video frame.
Yeah.
And turn it into this, you know, high speed, you know, time lapse of you driving along. It also does a speed ramped version of that, where you can set up to take images at increasing or decreasing intervals, so that when you do drop those into a video editor and turn it into a video, you get like a speed ramp effect. Which I thought was pretty cool. On top of that, it will use the microphone in your smartphone to use audio events for triggering. So if you're wanting to do, you know, lightning and thunder type photography, you can set it up to do that. I can't remember what the others were. There was a whole bunch. Oh, there was something to do with metals and magnetism sensor. So obviously that's using the compass type sensor within your camera. I'm not sure how it would use that for taking a shot. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of other things. And you can use it for long time exposures. So you can set your camera into bulb mode. And then, you know, using your smartphone, you can just dial in however long a shutter release you want. So you can go, you know, I want 1 hour of shutter open, you know, and then just walk away and leave it. And the camera will, your smartphone, which is running the app, will basically do all of the grunt work for you. Send a signal, like I said, presumably via Bluetooth, but it might just be Wi-Fi, to the dongle. The dongle has a cable with a common connector, but at the time that you order from Trigger Trap's website, they ask you what camera you've got, and according to what camera you've got, they will send you the cable that goes from that common adapter to whatever adapter your camera needs to plug into your cable release socket on your SLR. So basically, it doesn't matter, and their website says that they support over 300 DSLR bodies. So, yeah, pretty exciting. And it's like $30 for the dongle.
Yeah, I got me one of those.
So you just you let me sit there and go on and on and on about that for like 10 minutes, and now...
Good idea. Well, I haven't exactly got that one. I've got one called the IO Shutter, which is a year or so. It's an app for your iPhone. It does interferometer, sound release, all these kind of variations of stuff. Only works on iPhone though.
Okay, so how?
As far as I know.
So how does the app talk to your camera?
A cable.
So right. So cable, you had to buy the cable.
Well, some people do. Yeah.
Right.
Mate of mine invented it. So.
Oh, nice.
Is it in fact the same person who did the Orbis Ring Flash?
Oh, okay.
Same guy. Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty. Isn't it? If you want to do all that kind of stuff, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And I saw another cool little trigger device this week. You may or may not have heard of the brand of triggers called Cactus.
Yes.
Yeah. They've got new laser triggers now. Right. Which you could say, if you're doing animal or wildlife photography, you can set up a little trigger in the forest somewhere with this laser going across. And anytime something breaks the laser beam, yeah, it sends a signal back to your camera, triggers your camera.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool piece of techno kit. Nice. For those. And once again, like all Cactus stuff, it's fairly inexpensive. So
yeah.
So probably something worth recommending. Just whilst I think about it, if you Google a guy called James Neely, Neely, he does a lot of landscapes in the US and does some beautiful HDR stuff. Yeah, once again, some of it's a bit over the top, but the majority of it is very, very tastefully done.
Cool. Okay, I shall check his work out. That was all that I had on my list. You had a couple of other things. You were going to talk about the new Tamron vibration control 24-70 lens?
Well, newish. I've been using it for the last 6 months. I was one of the first people in the world to get it. I was rather lucky.
Nice.
And as such, you know, one of the first people to put it through its paces, and I found it to be an excellent lens. It was very fast focusing. It had a good image stabilizer. It's the only 24-70 lens in the world with image stabilized. only 24-70 2.8 lens with image stabilization. Right. But what got me, I think it's only just coming out in things like Nikon and Sony mounts, like as we speak sort of thing.
Oh, okay. I can't understand why the Sony would need it.
I think it's more the lens more so than necessarily the VC though.
Right, but the VC is kind of redundant on a Sony
camera. Yeah, but I guess they're not going to just make the same lens without it.
Right, okay.
I would assume.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the point is, DP Review just today released a review on it, which I thought was it was rather good, and it got a gold award, whatever that means.
Nice.
I guess that means it's better than silver and one step down from platinum or something. I don't know. But basically, if you believe all these ratings kind of stuff, it came up. I think it was 2% difference in overall rating than the Canon version. Now, the Canon version is a good $1,000+ more expensive and doesn't have image stabilized.
Right.
So there's kind of one of the reasons why I say to people, you know, people say, oh, why do you use Tamron lenses rather than brand name lenses? Well, one, it's to take away that stigma that the only way you can take good photographs is to use the most expensive gear. Hmm. But also, as I was saying, you know, there's only a few percentage points there. You know, let's say a Tamron or a Sigma lens or a Tahina lens is 5% less quality than the Canon Nikon equivalents. Hmm. If you don't have them lined up next to each other, you can't actually tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. These lenses are very, very good. So if you are out there and saying, oh, I'd really like a new lens, but yeah, I don't think I can justify the expense of these really high-end ones, well, you know, there are alternatives out there.
Yeah.
And that was just to sort of prove. And I was looking at, someone asked me when I posted that on my Facebook page, oh, could you recommend a good 35mm 1.4? I can't afford the Canons. And by chance, also, they'd released the Sigma 35mm 1.4 review, and it got like 96% or something. It's, yeah,
nice.
It's an extremely highly rated lens. There's some great lenses out there, and don't feel you're the only way to be a photographer is, or to enjoy photography, is to, you know, shoot with the most expensive stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the 24-70 as a focal range because it doesn't suit the way I shoot.
Yep.
But I know it's a lot of people's favourite sort of focal range, and if it's something you're looking for, it's a pretty darn good way to go.
Yep.
And lastly, but not leastly on my list, a little bit serious now.
Okay.
Quiet and serious. Every now and then, over the last few years, well, I don't know, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, I discovered a website was brought to my attention called dayswithmyfather.com.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's like, seems to be about it. Yeah, a couple of times a year, I find myself going back to this site. It's one of of all the sites on the internet, it's probably one of the ones I visit the most, other than, of course, the porn sites. it's a photograph.
You're talking about the camera porn sites, yeah.
Oh, of course, yes, yeah. What do you mean? What? Anyway, and it's an incredibly simple site. It's just a range of images and very few words.
Right.
But what it's, for those who've been to the site, or that I've recommended this to people over the years, anyone who's been to this site will know exactly why I'm talking about it, because it's one of the most phenomenal photo websites in the world. For those who haven't been to it, I'll strongly suggest you go get a box of Kleenex and just thought that could come across wrong as well, couldn't it? Take some tissues and go over to the site. And basically what it is this man, this photographer, his mother died unexpectedly.
Yep.
And after the wash-up of everything sort of getting done, he realised the full extent of his father's lack of mental awareness.
Right.
Which his mother had kind of been hiding from him, being the only other member of the family, for a long time. So he wasn't really aware, and it really came home the day of the funeral when he brought his dad home. And every 15 minutes, his dad was asking where his wife was.
Oh. Jeez.
And every 15 minutes, he had to explain that she was dead. Yeah. And the heartbreak and loss was relived over and over and over again. Oh. Every 15 minutes to half an hour sort of thing. Wow. And to the point where it was killing them both. So he just made up this story that she was overseas looking after her brother.
Oh, really?
And that's the story they kept for until his dad passed.
Oh, wow.
But because his dad had this short-term memory loss, and it was, and there's these photos. They're all shot with super shallow depth of field, all natural light portraits, all in the house of his dad. Sometimes him, sometimes little bits of other pieces, but incredibly emotive. You know, there's one photo he's taken of just a notepad by the phone. That his dad's written down, you know, where's his wife? He's written his wife's name. Where's somebody else? Where's somebody? Where is everybody? This heartbreak loss that this man has faced. Yeah. And so it's incredibly sad, but it's incredibly beautiful. You know, it's an incredibly touching website, and there's not a time I don't go to it that I don't have a bit of a sook. And so I would highly recommend, if you want to know why do we take photos, you know, why are we passionate about capturing the people important in our lives well, this site says it all. It's available as a book too to buy.
Wow. So even though his father has now passed away, is he still adding new content?
No.
Oh, right. It's kind of a museum now.
It's an homage. It's a, probably the right word. It's a museum's probably a great thing. But, you know, but millions of people gravitate to the site every year.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
they're still going back and still being touched and captured, even though his dad's been gone a few years now.
Yeah.
The book's available from Amazon for like $13 hardcover. So, you know, it's probably not a bad investment either, I would say.
Yeah, right. Okay, I will check that out.
So, yeah, I would highly recommend everyone spends a few minutes, but don't do it when you're in a rush. Do it when you've got some time to sit and just enjoy the beauty of it. And if you do have a big screen, you know, like your big 24-incher, I would highly recommend looking at it on a big screen because I think impact.
Okay.
If you don't go on your mobile phone and flip through it.
Right. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Don't devalue the images by making them tiny.
Right.
I would say that would be my little bit of tip. And finally...
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of the mirrorless party video?
That was very funny. It was great.
Wasn't it?
Good little bit of stop motion.
Yeah, gotta love
that's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Look at me. Yes, and gotta love the Leica. You know, the German arrogance.
Yeah.
The Fuji's desperation to be just like it. Yeah, I loved it. Fantastic. Very clever people. So if anyone else has got any cool photo... Yeah, little videos and stuff out there. Pass it through, let us know. We all want to have a bit of a laugh.
Definitely.
So that's it, my friend.
Excellent. All
it's
right.
A bit of a short one this week. We'll let people off. It has
been a short one, which is good. Now, I'm looking. I just got another notification on Facebook.
But yeah,
I'm
me
trying
too.
To see what that notification was.
Absolutely.
Linda Coulson's too busy having a yummy dinner to bother with questions for our podcast. That's just disgusting.
Yeah, but she did ask a very strange question earlier.
Oh, did she?
She did. What one thumb has experience taught you?
Sorry?
Exactly. I think that glass or two of wine she talks about later on may have confused her question somewhat.
I can't see her question.
If you could have, would have, should have, photography, what one thumb has experience taught you? Maybe she thinks what one thing. Just trying to read between the wines. Okay. Not the lines, the wines. That's clever. I like that. Read between the wines.
Yes, you're right.
What one thing has experience taught you? Well, it's not a bad question, you know? And I reckon it sort of ties straight back into Days with My Father.
Yeah, right.
For me.
Okay.
You know? I'm particularly emotive about family in photography,
yep.
And the one experience that has taught me is that we can't take this for granted. This that no one else is going to capture these people.
No.
Well, you know, and the one piece of experience is that one great photo of that person beats 10,000 cruddy ones every day of the week.
Oh, definitely.
One great photo, people. That's
definitely.
All it takes.
You know what? After you're talking about your cheap photo books that you were talking about three or four episodes back, I started thinking about photo books and the fact how, you know, we never print any of our images, or at least I don't. I'm horribly guilty of just, you know, having hard drives full of images that never go anywhere beyond...
Yep.
Being used as desktop wallpaper for my computer, or they get thrown on an SD card and stuck into a digital photo frame out in the living room.
Yeah.
Where at least they're being seen on a regular basis, but they're not actually hard copy prints. And Kath happened to come across one of the multitude of photo book suppliers on, you know, Groupon or one of those coupon type things, and she said, oh, you know, we can get this, you know, XYZ photo album that's normally $170 for $50. And I went, oh, okay, what the hell, you know, it's $50, and if it's crap, it doesn't matter, you know. So we bought the coupon, and I took all of the images that I was happy with from our West Australian road trip.
Nice.
Made up a 60 page 30 centimeter by 30 centimeter square photo book of our road trip, got it back and was absolutely blown away with how awesome it looked.
Wow.
And, you know, it came back with a hardcover and beautiful, heavy, really nice paper stock that was used for the pages.
Yeah.
It didn't feel flimsy or, you know, like if I'd spilt a, you know, glass of water on it, the whole thing would dissolve in 2 seconds flat, you know. They did a really, really nice job. And, you know, it was obviously up to me to put all the images into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But was just absolutely stoked. And so I'm just in the process now of finishing off a second book using the images from our cruise around New Zealand, which we did in October 2011, which again, you know, I had 14 days in New Zealand where, you know, took heaps of photos and again did nothing with
them. Consigned to the hard drive.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So I'm just in the process of putting together another 60-page, 30-centimeter by 30-centimeter photo book. So
isn't that incredible?
That'll get uploaded tonight, and hopefully I'll have it back next week. So
that's brilliant, isn't it?
So I'm kind of glad that you sort of got talking about that a few episodes ago, because it sort of gave me the impetus to kind of follow it up, and that's the first time I've done photo books for myself, and I kind of think, yeah, this is really good. And you know, as you were just saying about having one great photo, you know, one well taken photograph of someone beats 10,000 crappy ones any day of the
week. Exactly.
You know, I was going through the images, and forgive me if this sounds conceited, but I was thinking these are great family images that, you know, we'll all be able to look back on. You know, Kath and I'll look back on them in our twilight years, and hopefully Max will do the same thing, you know, 50 years from now.
Exactly.
And be able to look back on them and go, thank God.
Because you won't be able to plug that hard drive in.
Dad took some decent photos, you know? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I can plug that hard drive in for sure.
Exactly.
The mosaic book that I did the other week,
yeah.
My wife loved it so much that she had a friend whose birthday was coming up who does a lot of personal coaching, this sort of stuff. So my wife went and found a whole bunch of motivational quotes that she felt really, really, really just were that person too.
Oh, okay.
And she made a mosaic book out of it.
Nice.
She just went and found personal quotes that really meant something to her about her.
Yep.
And made a book based on that, which is a brilliant idea, I thought.
Yeah.
You know?
Awesome.
And one last thing on photo books. I was up in Mackay recently.
Yeah.
The people I was staying with, the lovely Amanda Fraser and her family, she makes a lot of photo books of her kids, of her family. She's always shooting them and always making. She does a blog, and then she turns the blog into books.
Oh, okay.
Wow. And you know, I got to tell you. Yeah, I was there for 4 or 5 days, maybe a few more. I can't remember how long it was. But to come home all the time and see one of her, I don't know, 12 kids, whatever she's got, sitting there just off their own whim, just in the front couch, just reading through, flicking through one of their photo books.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's great to see kids involved and looking at their own life. And you see, off their own bat, just want to sit and look at photos of the stuff the family did a year ago or 6 months ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Was it you who mentioned to me this psych study that had come up with the notion that it's good for kids to see pictures of themselves?
It certainly was. Yeah. It was a study done probably 5 or 6 years ago now where child psychologists approved how invaluable it is for children to have photos of themselves with their family, with their extended family, with events that they're doing, printed out for them to look at and keep connecting with and keep building that base of who they are as a person.
And knowing that they're valued within the family unit.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Just jumping back to the very first thing we were talking about this Melbourne photographer who's, you know, got out of the game. We should mention Natalie DePetta.
Should we?
Well, we should at least say hi.
G'day, Nat.
She's in the same boat. You know, she does, you know, families, maternity, baby photos.
Yeah.
Nat, if you're still listening to this podcast, love to hear your input on that whole thing. Do you find... Because Nat's not shooting in a cap city. She's in a small country town.
She sure is.
It'd be interesting to know whether or not she finds any, you know, undercutting going on in her market. Or whether the small town thing is an advantage to Natalie because, you know, maybe everybody in that town just knows that Nat does all that stuff and
does it really well.
And does it so beautifully well that maybe she's just got the market cornered. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear, you know, just the other side of the coin.
Absolutely.
So, Nat, if you're still listening, give us a yell.
If you're not listening, maybe send us an email. On that silly note.
Absolutely. Well, mate, we'll get to record one more episode before we see you up here.
Yes, apparently. You will.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, you and hopefully by the time you come up here in a week and a half, you'll have definitely shaken the man flu.
There's every chance.
There is.
No guarantee, but there's every chance. Exactly.
All right, mate. Well, I hope you're feeling better by next week, so.
Thanks, mate.
All right, we'll talk to you then.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email thevoice@shuttersincpodcast.com.